Welcome to this week's episode of Straggler Adventures, where we introduce you to really cool people who do really cool things. We are not your parents' middle agers, reminding us that you don't have to be first to be the greatest, and it's never too late to live your best life.
We are here at Straggler Adventures. Thank you for joining us today. We had a bit of a hiatus. We are joined today by the incredible, infamous, talented, absolutely gorgeous Rosie Best. And we're so excited to have her here because she does so many really cool things. I actually met Rosie over 20 years ago. We were in a production together, the Laramie Project. If you know anything about theater or Matthew Shepard or the Laramie Project, it's an absolutely beautiful piece of literature. Dave, this is Rosie Bass. This is my friend. She's absolutely lovely. I could just sit and talk to her all day because I just miss seeing her. She's so lovely. And she's got really cool things that she does as well. So when I met Rosie, she was a theater teacher at the local school of art. My dream was to work with kids in a real setting. And she was in charge of the kids' theater. Toledo rep at the time. And that woman got me in there and got me teaching. This is it. This is the reason that I
actually
have done what I've
actually
done.
I think I wasn't in charge of it. I think what had happened was that they had asked me to run a class, and you and I had been talking, and I said, you know what, I don't think I have the time right now, but let me tell you who you should get. I think that's the way that went down.
Possibly. Yeah.
And you haven't stopped since.
I've not stopped since. Rosie has this beautiful heart where she does a lot of really cool things, incredible experiences, and embodies what it means to live a life, one true to yourself and one that raises others up. And she has embodied that with her entire life, her career, what she does on the side. And I feel like every one of your projects I see you do has something that just means more. It just means more. It makes
I appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
It's inspiring the way that you live your life.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's funny because as we do this, I have just stepped down from being the assistant director at Northview High School, where I had been for about 8 years. And part of the reason that I did it now was because, so I just turned 60. A couple of years ago, we hired a choreographer who's just been fabulous, Sarah Dassault. She really fits that situation way better. I can just come in and guest. Like, I can just come into a rehearsal and visit. I just got someone to direct a show for us. It's Riley Runnels. She is a superb up-and-coming 20-something, has done a lot of theater in the area. She's on our board at Issue Box. She's bringing some cool stuff to this show that I would never have dreamed of. It's cool when you get to do things, but also how cool is it when you get to say, okay, go do it, you know?
Tell us about Issue Box Theater. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So Issue Box started 10 years ago. If I can wind back to about being 45, I remember having a conversation with my boss at the time. And I said to him, when I wake up and I'm 50, I want to know this is exactly where I was meant to be. And I didn't know at the time that I was basically saying, and I'm going to be leaving here. But there were some things about TSA that were exhausting. I had been there for 10 years. It was a lot. Very, very full and fabulous experiences taking kids to Edinburgh, having kids win international competitions. Great. But it was also exhausting. And so what I decided I wanted to do was to study for my PhD in theater, because that felt like a really good reason to leave. And anyway, the long and short of it is that sometimes when we have these midlife brainstorms or crises or whatever, what we envision doesn't end up showing up, but we end up creating space that we can embrace something new. At 50 years of age, I was in the beginning of becoming a social worker, which my first interviews for my placement, the guy says to me, you realize you've been doing social work all your life just without the title? And I said, yeah, actually, that makes perfect sense to me. Unfortunately, here you have to have the qualifications. So I'm doing my master's in social work, which was my second master's because I had a master's in teaching theater. All this from a kid who failed high school. Note, I'm doing my second master's. I'm in these classes. I'm like thinking, oh my gosh, this is it. We need to do theater in partnership with the community. Social workers' mandate is to work with the poor, the vulnerable, and the oppressed. And all of a sudden, I began to realize how elitist theater can be. We expect people to come to a certain place, to have the transport to get to that place. We expect people to be able to afford the tickets that we have. We expect people to be able to keep themselves still and in a chair for 2-3 hours. All these different things that actually, when you look at the work of social work, become barriers so that people who really should be getting involved in the arts aren't necessarily seeing the arts. My working title for Issue Box was Community Partnership Theatre, which I knew was a crap title. We need to not have a theatre. We need to take the theatre to the community where it's going to hit the people who need whatever the experience is. And we need to bring them shows that speak to their reality. And we need to then not only expose them to theatre that speaks to their reality, but then we need to have an opportunity at the end of that to say, okay, how did that make you feel? What do you need? Do you need resources? What experiences? So I'm having all of this brain kind of tornado going on. And then I was at the Village Church at the time with Sherry Holdridge. And I was like, we need to put on Next to Normal, which is a musical that was a Pulitzer Prize winning show. Beautiful. And it the main character is living with bipolar disorder, although because the show is older, they talk about manic depression, but that's the old way we talk about it. So she's living with bipolar. She has 2 children and a husband and everything's fine. Right. And then, but that's not how the story works out. I'm not going to tell you the rest of the plot because that would spoil it for anyone who wants to go, oh, I want to look up that show. There was a lot of personal reasons for me why I wanted to do that show. And I was like, so how do we start getting the community involved? Well, we went to NAMI and we said, okay, NAMI, we want to do this show and we want to bring money to you as a result of doing it. So the first like 4 or 5 years, maybe even 6, there was no money that came back from, like, there was nobody working for Issue Box. What we had was an opportunity to, we had a producer who would meet our costs of the rights and the scripts and all of that sort of thing. And then whatever we raised through ticket sales, we would give that out to a community organization. So the first one was NAMI, and then we also gave some to the Village Church. I think we raised about $5,000 or $6,000. One of the things that was really, really important in that is, and I think it's funny because it's like I did some things sort of intuitively that have become staples in how we do things that I didn't really have all of the thoughts organized as to why I was doing it. But for example, Aaron Wiley, who went on to start the Willow Center, she ended up playing Diana, who is this person living with bipolar. And I had 3 very fabulous people from Toledo who were in the running and were in callbacks for that role. And I ended up choosing Erin, partly because I loved her vocal quality. I loved the vocal quality of the other two, but partly because I wanted her to play Diana as normal in terms of, rather than crazy, right? Yeah. I know the song says, who's crazy? But it's like, we are surrounded by people, for instance, living with bipolar. and we don't know. And part of the stigma that we have about mental health comes because we say, oh, that crazy person there, or that weirdo, or that, oh, Fruit Loop over there. And I have people in my family who live with bipolar. And I wanted to sort of create an environment where there would be like an acceptance and a recognition of this is just something that is going on in the brain chemistry of this person that makes life very, very difficult for them. And so that was Erin, because she didn't overplay it, right? I mean, that's the temptation with a role like that, is to overplay it and make it bigger than it needs to be, because you get to, because for the actor, it's like, oh, I get to play a crazy person. Oh, this is so much fun, right? What's going on?
Sorry, you are fine, Rosie. It is. Listening to you speak is just so lovely. And for anybody who loves somebody who deals, sorry, I did not mean to cry today. But as somebody who loves somebody so much with bipolar and understands how hard it is,
yes,
and how, you know, it's, I mean, pieces like Next to Normal are so important.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important because people don't get, they don't understand what right. bipolar is. Right. And what you hear of bipolar is, oh, I can't decide what I want to eat for dinner. I'm so bipolar. And that is so far from what bipolar is.
Right.
And it is, you love people with bipolar, but it is so difficult in the day-to-day. It's yeah. so difficult. Just so I am sorry, just listening to you with your compassion and your passion over it, and you're not wrong about Erin Wiley. She is a beautiful person and has a beautiful voice.
My parents were Methodist local preachers. Part of me comes from that very social, the gospel is important, love mercy, seek justice, and walk humbly with your God. And even though I got kicked out of the church because I came out, oh, wait, is this just a way of you getting on my gay agenda, by the way?
Yes, yes, it is. I'm so jealous. I wanted to get on your gay agenda, and here I am. Yes!
Every June, I do my gay agenda, and it's like, you know, oh, on my gay agenda today is having coffee with. So today I'll record a podcast with Shauna, you know. I have a complicated relationship with the church, but not necessarily with God. So a lot of the things that I do are things that I watched in my childhood being done. Back when I was a kid, you know, the Troubles were very active and people were dying and it was very horrible. Creating dialogue between people is really important. I mean, it's part of the reason why we're in the trouble that we are right now, because what's happening, people can't dialogue anymore. So now aggression and violence is the predominant form of interaction between people. And that's problematic. And even people who previously have seemed like they had some level of rational ability to discourse and say, I see your point, but I'm coming at that from a very, very different place. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we discuss with fascists, but where there's disagreement about are gay people in the Bible, are gay people not in the Bible? Yes, they are. And no, it's not just about six verses. So Issue Box was the name that I came up with for this piece because I didn't want to define it around an issue. I wanted to have the ability to discuss whatever issue seemed to come forward. Right. So I didn't want it to be a poverty theater or a community theater, or because that has all sorts of connotations that we won't go there. I wanted it, whatever the issue was. And what's been interesting is that we started with Next to Normal, with mental health. We did Company, and we used that to talk about people who were unhoused and the sort of complications of that. I think the biggest piece we've done is Willard Suitcases. So the Willard Suitcases is about an asylum in upstate New York called Willard Asylum for the Chronic Insane, because nothing helps you feel less stigmatized than having chronic insane in the place where you live. They found 400 and something odd suitcases, and the photographer John Crispin went in and photographed every single one of those suitcases. So it's a song cycle piece about these suitcases. She chose very deliberately not to research the actual life, but she chose instead to research the time period and what was going on, and then use the artifacts to inform the story that she wrote. There is one suitcase, and the only thing that was in it was a fur coat. The piece that she wrote for that is heartbreaking. It starts off with this female singing this song about how her husband was great and he was amazing and everything was always joyous. And then the switch and the music sort of, so it's this very lyrical piece. And then suddenly there's this dun, 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 and you realize that he's kind of exacting, controlling and all these sort of things because the switch has flipped. A historical thing that women are often seen as being too emotional. So she ends up being taken to Willard. Now, we don't know if that's the story, but it very clearly could be the story, right? You know, if you go to willardsuitcases.com, you can see all of these images that they were written about. We got this conversation with John Crispin, who was the photographer. And I'm having a conversation with him one day, and I said, can we use your photos when we do the show? And he said, yeah, but actually, you know, I have a show that could sit in a gallery. Do you have a gallery? I said, John, I don't even have a theater. I said, but you know what? Give me the weekend and I'll see what I can do. Well, by Tuesday, when we spoke again, I had an agreement with the Toledo Lucas County Library for them to host his show. And then I'd also had a conversation with the composer. I said, I want to travel the show. She says, well, okay. Well, you know that they sort of thought I was going on tour with this show. I said, no. So the library did a premiere for us. And then we went to St. Paul's United Methodist Church, which is right next to one of the shelter. And we didn't give away all of the tickets because we wanted tickets for the people to come in from the shelter. And we went to the Thomas Wernert Center, which is a peer support mental health agency. And we did it there. And then our final performance was at Northview High School. And we reckon that about 950 people saw that show. But the really special thing about it was that all the tickets were free. Because when we went to the library, we couldn't sell tickets. And I said, well, then I'm not going to sell tickets for one performance and not the others. So let's just do it so that people can come in. The tickets are free, but if they want to donate, they can. I'm doing the research for Willard Suitcases. And I finally put together the story of that was very close to me, right? So my mom was adopted. I knew that. Why she was adopted was because her mother had what was called parappal fever, which is the old way of talking about bipolar for pregnant people. Because it was 1931, my grandmother got put into an asylum in Belfast. And so, and because her husband said, I'm not dealing with this, my mom kind of became the fruit of the poisonous tree, right? Because she was the child of both of them. She was associated with that, which would be shameful in 1931. And so she was rejected from the family. I didn't find that out until as I was putting all these pieces together for the Willard, I was like, oh my goodness, this is actually my family's story, right? And so that was kind of cool to realize that I now understood something more about my family and the story that they had. But also, I think is part of why I feel so passionate about dignity in mental health issues. I think it's 1 in 4 people or 1 in 5 people are diagnosed with a mental health issue. It's not those people, it's me. It's me that needs to understand people living with mental health issues because I'm one of them. You know, I live with depression and anxiety. At this point in my life, I manage it pretty well using a combination of exercise and medication and therapy and. So yeah, so performance-wise, we've tackled a number of different issues, but performances are kind of just about a third of what we do. In-person performances, I would say, are about a third of what we do at Issue Box. And this is one of the things that really marks us out as different. So we have two programs. The CME program is the in-person is our performances. And we also have a CME virtual. And I think this is where I talked to you, Shauna, a while ago. So as a result of COVID, we had to pivot. What do we do? We started to talk to people online and say, you know, what would you want people to know about you? I wrote a piece for that first one called I Have a Name, which was about people living with dementia. It was because I was visiting, actually, Sherry Holdridge's mom. She was still alive at the time, and she had just been moved into a facility. And as I went to visit her, Betty was this incredible social worker from years back in Texas and had done some amazing work. And I was in her room and I saw these two aides walk past and say, she's two assists. I later on was working in memory care and I realized that probably it was the change of shift and they were using shorthand to describe the sort of helps that this person needed. But in me, this rage, it was like, she's not two assists, she's Betty. She's an amazing person, right? But you know, COVID was such a horrible time because people living in facilities often didn't have like the ability to get visitors. And for a lot of those people, that was difficult. And I thought, I can't live with myself sitting at home. So I got a job as an $11 an hour hospitality aide at the local Kingston. And so what that meant was I would go in and
For our listeners who are not from Toledo, Kingston is an assisted living center.
Yeah, yeah. Because one of the things that Issue Box had started to do before COVID was this storytelling for people living with dementia. My main area that I was placed was in the memory care. There was this one lady who just touched my heart. So one of the things that happens with people living with dementia is that they revert to their original language. So she was speaking German, and I didn't know when I first met her that she actually spoke English. Well, so I sat down at the dining room table and I started reading from the Brothers Grimm because that was something I found on the shelves. But I did it in my theatrical, you know, ooh, you little rascal, you know. And the first time I knew that she spoke English was when I said that line and she said, oh, you little rascal. Oh, my gosh, she speaks English, right? I found out at her funeral, the card, it said one of the things that she loved to do was to read to her grandchildren. She also had been a very accomplished pianist. We would play the piano on the table. So one of the problems for people living with dementia is that whenever we talk about that, we only talk or we mostly talk about end stage dementia. So I've got very connected with people living with dementia. And we've written a piece that I'm editing to try and get it ready. It's about 40 minutes called To Whom I May Concern. It's written as letters to people that might be, you know, like my neurologist. Thank you for recognizing that something was going on with me. But also ideas about retailers, about there are lanyards that people have with big yellow flowers on that say, I'm dealing with an invisible disability. I might have trouble when I come through the airport. This opportunity to see people as just more than a diagnosis, more than a disease, more than a label, to see people as people first. So our See Me like has virtual opportunities for people to talk. And we've had people to talk about things like, I had a stroke. Here's what I'd like you to know. I've been sexually assaulted. Last year, we had somebody whose story was about helping the police catch a serial killer. She was attacked by this man in 1989. She had the presence of mind in that moment to listen to what he said. And when she told the police what he said, they said, we got him. We never released that bit of information. And so he had identified himself as being the person who'd killed this other person, who'd killed this other person. When she told our story, her story with us, she did not want to mention the name of the person because that wasn't important. She wanted to talk about it from the point of surviving this experience. So we are currently doing our sixth iteration of that. And we have 14 stories that, you know, a lot of them have come to us. We didn't go looking for the stories. We just, you know, said, okay, we're taking stories again. And they always get they get presented around the time of the Human Trafficking and Social Justice Conference in Toledo. The other side of what we do is the Imagine That program. And that's where we do that with youth, we do that with community, and we do that with people living with dementia or seniors, because we have some seniors who enjoy what we do, whether they have dementia or not, and they just get a good giggle out of it. So I'm about to start this week with the Young Artists at Work program. We have artists between the ages of 14 and 18 in Toledo that get hired for 6 weeks in the summer to make artwork that then gets put around the town.
Oh, very cool.
It's a mural or a installation or all sorts of different things. And I go in and I do a sort of series of, alongside of that, sort of the soft skills of being an artist. Like, you know, part of being an artist is it's your baby that you're presenting. And sometimes, you know, when you feel insecure, you're like not sure whether people are going to like your baby or not, you know, and sometimes when people bring in criticism, they think of it in terms of you're trying to kill my baby rather than the root of the word critical. If you think about critical care, you don't go to critical care because you want to die. You go to critical care because if nothing happens, you will die. And so the care that you need, though, is swift and precise in order to get you back towards life.
With all of that, if somebody's listening, whether they're in Toledo, Ohio, or somewhere else, because full disclosure, we have some listeners in Egypt, which is every time cool. That pops up that they listen, we're like, yay, Egypt. There they are, that one person. But so not everybody's necessarily from Toledo who's going to be listening. But if somebody's interested in getting involved in this, how would you suggest, whether they're in Toledo or not?
Right.
What are some suggestions that you can give people on how to get involved and find their community in this? Because this is incredible. There's nobody who's going to listen to this and go, yeah, this isn't amazing. Because it is. It's absolutely amazing.
We're just doing what we can do, right? But here's the thing. Most of the problems that we experience happen because we end up getting into silos. Like we go, I could never say that I was living with a mental health challenge because no one will understand me. And we start to wall up and we start to sort of close in. Nobody would ever understand that I was a sexual assault survivor. Like nobody will ever understand that I have been in toxic relationships. So I'm just going to keep myself to myself and not say anything, right? So part of the thing is telling your story with authenticity and integrity. Wherever you are, challenge the eggshells that say to you, you can't say that. Why not? Why not? There's a great show on Netflix right now that I just think is wonderful. It's called You Can't Ask That, right? And they're these little 20, 30 minute programs. They come out of Australia and they have, each episode is about something. We watched one last night that was about firefighters. So it's not necessarily problem communities, right? It's like some of them, but some of them are. One of the episodes was on schizophrenics, right? One of the episodes was on people who are carnies, right? Who are the fair workers. They just get a series of questions. A lot of them are very ignorant, but they'll have like maybe 10 different people who are in that category who have lived experience of that. And like, so the first one last night was, did you become a firefighter because you wanted to get in the calendar? Right? But then it's very interesting how simple questions actually can end up opening a lot of information. I would recommend anybody, if you don't understand a community, see if there's an episode on the community that you don't understand, and just listen to people who live that experience and let them tell you what it's like to live as them, right? The old thing, to assume makes an ass of you and me, right? That's the old thing. But too many assumptions actually cause death, right? People who assume that like being gay is a terrible, terrible thing and it's going to infect your whole life and your whatever. It's like most gay people that I know are just trying to live their life, have coffee with friends, eat dinners, do their work, whatever. Like, I didn't want to be gay. I grew up in a church that said you shouldn't be gay. And when I came out, I kind of knew what was going to happen, that I was going to get kicked out. But I'm not the usual person. Like my wife, we've been together now 10 years, officially married 10 years, but we've been together 23, right? A lot of straight couples haven't got that many years, right? And we've had the same experiences that other couples have. There's times when we understand each other well and we get on well, and there's times where we're like, what the fuck did you do that for? What were you thinking? I think the thing is, Eleanor Roosevelt said, you would worry a lot less about what people think about you if you realize how little they did. We get very balled up into these silos of shame because we're afraid that if we're honest and if we tell people what's going on with us, they are going to abandon us. And being abandoned is a big, big fear for a lot of people. So we keep the secrets, we keep things tight. You don't have to be like me and tell everybody everything. There are very clear reasons why I do things. Like, I want to break stigma. I want to bring hope. Once a month, I go and sit with people at Cherry Street Mission in Toledo, which is a homeless shelter for men, right? I do coffee and storytelling. Every month I have between 2 and 10 people come in and sit, and we just talk about whatever is going on in their world, right? And it's because I understand, having read Dignity, I understand that I am no better than anyone, whether they are living in an unhoused state or whether they have been somebody who has been trafficked, which I've done a lot of work with people who've been trafficked as well. Every single one of us has an inalienable right to dignity. It's not something we're given, it's something we have. But some people have had it stolen or had it mocked or had it covered up. and they don't realize they have it. And so I think the importance is that we help people, we facilitate opportunities for people to tell their story as it is, not as they want it to be, but as it is. And I think when people can say, this is my truth, it can restore dignity to that person.
I love that. And not just sharing your story, listening to stories, but believing the stories as it is told. I think that is such a missing piece in our society right now, is that people can tell us their stories and we go, that's not how it is.
Well, and one of the things I'm struggling with right now is I feel like we're not horrified by the right things. I made a post on Facebook when Trump and Elon were having their spat. Elon apparently lost $34 billion in one day. Mm. How outrageous is it that one man has the ability to lose that much money and not bat an eyelid, when you've got somebody for whom $100 might make the world of difference? We've tried to honor our storytellers. We've had grants in the past. We've tried to honor our storytellers. We give them a small stipend. In the past, we've given them $100. And I'm being careful how I say this because, you know, I always say, look, I don't know whether we're going to have the money this year. But we have tried to give people $100. I remember calling one of the participants last year. And like $100 to me, I'm at the end of my, you know, I'm at the end of my career, right? Like working towards the retirement sort of, as if that'll ever happen. But like $100 doesn't seem like a lot of money, right? But for somebody who doesn't have a lot, it is huge. And I got this lesson last year when I called this person and I said, so I just wanted to let you know, I deposited, I think it was the Cash App, right? And they just started crying. She said, that is exactly what I need for my deposit. Mm-hmm. She was going to be able to get out of the terrible housing situation that they were in because of this. And it again, and one of the other participants had said, like my intern was one time talking and said, well, it's not a big amount of money. And she says, don't ever say it like that, because you like that makes a difference to people. And again, it's like, so I've got 15 storytellers this year. I don't know yet where that money is going to be, right, when it gets to it, but that's $1,500. Now we produce a video that's maybe 4 or 5 or 6 minutes long for them, and it tells their story, and we give that to them at the end. We say, we don't own this. It's your story. Some of them have said, yeah, put it on YouTube, but we don't make that decision for them. One of the women had breast cancer during 2020, had 4 very invasive surgeries, wasn't able to have any visitors, wasn't able to see people. It was a horrible, horrible experience. And she wanted people to know what it was like to feel that sort of abandonment in that hospital. These invasive procedures had to keep happening because something didn't quite go right. It's like the power of story restores dignity and it ennobles us. And that's the truth about the arts generally. They ennoble us and restore us to the humanity that we should have at all times.
Rosie, thank you so much for joining us today. All of this is such incredible information. We're attaching the links to all of this when we post this. It's an important conversation. What you do matters so much. You are giving voice to the voiceless. You live a life that most of us can only dream of having that sort of impact. And I think that you impact people so far beyond what you will ever know and understand, and you do it anyways, especially right now in the world that we are living in. It cannot be said how valuable you are to me as a person. I love everything from your gay agenda to the stuff that you're doing, that there's just stories that need to be told and not everybody's ready to tell them. But when you start normalizing telling your story, I really think that that's going to make a big difference in the big picture of things. And for anybody else listening, you haven't found your community. And sometimes what our podcasts do really do is ableist, because we're talking about triathlons and running community. And I'm so grateful that you let us share a piece for those who aren't in the place of, hey, I want to go run a marathon, because there's so much privilege in all of that. There's so much privilege in the life that we live every single day. There's so much privilege. And so just thank you so much for sharing all of this. And we're going to attach the links. And if you have information or if you have questions, I'm sure that you can reach out to Issue Box Theater. We'll put that contact information. And thank you so much. We really appreciate you being here.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I adore you so much. I adore you so much.